One of the good guys, one of the most loved people, I would say, in racing anywhere. And in my 40-plus years of being involved in the game of the media side, I don't think I've met a nicer bloke. And the bloke bows out today, and he's been one of our great jockeys. His name is Darren Gouchy. Gouch, thanks for coming in this morning. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Brian. It's good to be here. My last day riding, but, well, you know, all these things come to an end sometime, and, you know, I'm just overwhelmed by the support and all the best wishes I've had through the week. It's been fantastic.
37 years you've been riding. 37 years. Yeah. It's you say it slowly. It's a big score, isn't it?
It's been a while. Yeah, it has been a while. It all started when I was 13, and my older brother Michael was apprenticed at Caulfield, and I was more into playing other sports such as soccer, and all the boys at that age, they all grew, and I didn't. I stayed pretty small. I was walking around about 28 kilograms ring and weight, so... I went down there once I started to learn on the pony, and I had a really good friend, still my mate, he's a champion jockey, Jeff Bamford, who put me on his pony and helped me to learn how to ride. Also, my brother did, and once I got the gift of it a little bit, I thought, well, this is what I wanted to do. I was hooked.
As a kid, kids ride bikes, you know, small bikes, four wheels, and then they take the training wheels off, and they quite often graduate to the dirt bikes and things like that. And it's generally that sort of adrenaline rush, speed, speed, speed. Is that what you felt on the pony initially?
I did, yes.
Fast ponies.
I know I used to whiz around a little ring on a little pony called Josh. Every morning, I was on the weekends when I started, because I was still going to school, of course, in Glenroy. Used to make the trip to Caulfield, and once morning work finished, I was straight on the pony. I think I drove it mad around this ring for hours and hours every day.
So you're coming, you're at school, you're coming from Glenroy across to Caulfield, which is a fair hike, obviously. You had did your parents bring you, or did you go by train? How'd you do it?
Mum and Dad used to take me across time to time, and when they were busy, I did catch the train. But I couldn't wait till, I'll tell you what, I was always pretty quick out of the classroom Friday afternoon.
Yeah, to get across to Caulfield.
Get to the train, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And, gee, your first ride, can you remember it? You were apprenticed to Frank King.
Yeah, I was apprenticed to Frank King, and I was lucky enough to, working for Don Shannon early, and... he retired, and once I left school, Frank King had a vacancy for an apprentice. So he's always been a master of apprentices, and he's a great man and been a great influence in my life. And so was Gene King. And I had my first ride actually for Frank King, and I was like all, you know, jock apprentices having their first ride, you're pretty nervous and hoping for a fairy tale start, but the horse ran second last.
Oh dear.
And then I picked up another ride of Ron Morns on the day at Ballarat, and it ran second last too, and it wasn't a real good start, but
but it changed. How many rides do you reckon you actually had as an apprentice jockey before you finally got that winner? Because that first winner did come on the 10th of April in 1982. It was down at Bairnsdale, and it was a horse called Turbler, trained by Eric Still.
Yes, it was.
Big field?
It was a very big field, Brian. It was three runners. I remember leaving that morning from home, and I said to Mum, I'll definitely run a place today. And she looked at me a bit strange, says, you're a bit cocky today. And she didn't know it was a three-horse field. The horse was 10-1 on, but I'll never forget the race. I was very grateful for Eric Still to put me on the horse, and I did ride a few winners for Eric after that, and it was good.
And you gradually worked your way. That was April of 82. On the 28th of December the same year, 2 days after Boxing Day, of course, races are at Moonee Valley. I reckon I called this race too. And you're on a horse called War Flight for the late trainer Ray Lawson, who trained at Flemington. I reckon you went out with a pretty big lead in that race.
I did, Brian. It wasn't...
Was that intentional?
No, it wasn't intentional at all. I remember my instructions, and Ray said to me, the horse, he'll jump well, and just put him in the fifth, sixth position, and just come with a late run. The barrier's open, and I just sort of got my spot, and all I felt was my saddle just went forward, and I had basically no control over the horse. And all I remembered was Frank King said to me, in a situation like that, you got to let the horse just ride, let him roll, have his head and let him roll.
So just explain that to our listeners. The saddle moved up the horse's wither.
It went right up the horse's wither. I was basically sitting nearly on the horse's neck. And the reason why Frank advised me always to, if the saddle did do that, was just to let the horse roll so the saddle might come back and make it a bit more comfortable in the run. And I remember going down to the first turn, I was 10 lengths in front. and I thought, oh, they're going to kill me. I'm going to look so stupid. I'll never get another ride. I was so worried.
Yeah.
And I remember getting by what the school is at Mooney Valley, and I was still a long, long way in front. And I straightened up for home, and all I could see was daylight behind me still. And I just went for it, and the horse won by about 5 lengths. Everybody thought I was a genius.
I think we did on the day, and it was daylight, as you say, about 4 or 5 lengths, well out in front. And it started a run which we've never seen before in terms of winning sequences. From that day, late December 82, you went through 18 consecutive city race meetings riding winners on the Wednesdays and Saturdays in town. I don't think we've seen anything like that. And that sort of went a sequence through to the end of July, the 30th of July, and that particular day, I think you rode 2 winners, Gold Consols and Gold Fiore. So an incredible run, but you'd arrived. You're now in town. You're a big time.
Yeah, well, at the time I was claiming the full 3 kilograms, which is a big help. I also had the support of, you know, trainers I'd worked for at Caulfield, like Jeff Murphy and Angus Armanasco, and other trainers I don't want to forget to mention. But it was a time of life, it did go very quick, and it was amazing. It was just, I went, you know, from struggling to get a ride, all of a sudden I was getting rides, 2 or 3 rides in one race. And it, like I said, it happened quick, and I was very fortunate to have the support and get on those horses to win.
So if the trainers were offering you, you know, 3 trainers want you for their horse in the one race, who'd make the call? Would Frank King, your master, make the call?
Yeah, Frank King, he'd make the call. And he did a great job. You know, he always did it for me. He knew his form very well. And like I said, I was blessed to have a great master like Frank. And he not very often he got it wrong.
And you're able to win the leading riders table, that's the leading jockey in Melbourne, Metropolitan Wins, as an apprentice, 82, 83, 83, 84, 84, 85. 3 straight years you beat the senior riders as an apprentice. That had never been done before. So these landmarks, and you came back in the mid-90s, you're a senior rider by then, and again you won the table. But back through those early 80s, we had some wonderful riders here, the Gary Willetts from New Zealand, champion rider, Pat Hyland, Robert Heffernan, Brent Thompson. So it wasn't an easy sort of comp, was it?
No, it wasn't an easy comp. You know, they're great riders, and I always look up to them, and I'm still good friends with all these people, you know, all these jockeys, and they've helped me over the years when I was apprentice starting up. Then all of a sudden I'm there competing against them, and like I said, through the support I had during that period, I was able to win the apprenticeship, and most importantly is when I think what helped me more than anything else was when my first sort of real day I rode at Spring Carnival Derby Day, I had a handful of rides and I rode 3 winners on that day, and that sort of put me up with them in a sense that I could compete. And I remember that year I outrode my claim and on Tarja Cliffs in the Oaks. And
that's right, yeah.
Those are the sort of things that sort of fell into place for me, and I was very fortunate that timing was everything. Yeah. And like I said, I had the support from all these great trainers, and like any jockey, we all need the horse, and I was very fortunate.
Yeah, but what you had was this gift, and we trace back to through those times, and I lived through and worked through those times as a broadcaster, but you had this gift, and the gift was in your head, in the timing, the rating of a horse, and in your hands to get horses to relax. And that day you're talking about was 83 on Derby Day, you know, one of the showcase days of racing in Australia. Derby Day 83, you're 17 years of age, and you won the Pure Pack, which is the Group 1 sprint race on River Rough. who'd win a William Reid for you as well. But to win three races at 17, that really showed that was the spotlight on Australian racing for you, wasn't it?
Well, it was. It was a point in time of, you know, my career where I was starting to lose my claim, and competing with no claim, that just it put me there. So I was able to compete without a claim.
The wonderful horses, the Superimpose and Shaftesbury Avenue and Octagonal and Lonro and Over, El Segundo, Rancho Ruler, Pleach, what a terrific little mare she was. I think you won six in a row on her.
Yes, I did. She was a bonny mare. She was a champion. She was a ripper. I did win six in a row on her. She was Ian McKinley trained her.
Grey with a red sash.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There are colours. But I remember the first time I rode her, she just jumped, go straight to the front, eyed along, just kick away. She was a beauty.
Yeah, some replays online in the last couple of days that people have been putting up on Twitter. And it's fabulous to watch her, Pleach, because you dictate, you'd be sitting on her, something had come at you hard, you know, with about 300 metres or the old furlong and a half to go, and you just give her a bit more range, she'd kick, but you wouldn't panic, you'd just still have a good grip on her, and then you'd go for home in the last 100. And she had that wonderful sort of will to win, didn't she? She knew where the line was.
She did. She had, like you said, a great will to win, and you said, she had a courageous heart.
Superimpose winning the Epsom Handicap. I think he won his first race at Seymour, ridden by Stephen Purridge. You got beaten on him one day at Flemington on a Wednesday meeting, and I remember talking to Lee Friedman after it. It's about the 87, might have been, around the 87. And he said, the sectionals that day, you're in the last race, you got beaten on Superimpose in the last race at Flemington Wednesday. And he said, the sectionals breakdown were extraordinary, the performance that he put in the ground that he made up. And he went on to be one of the all-time great thoroughbreds. He's a member of the Hall of Fame, Superimpose, two Epsoms, two Doncasters, a Cox Plate, and probably one of the best rides you ever gave him was in that Melbourne Cup when you ran second behind the stablemate Terrific.
Yeah, he is probably the best horse I've rode, Superimpose, and I remember that day clearly when I ran second in that Flemington, and I remember Lee said to me, he said, this horse goes like a Group 1 horse, but he really hasn't shown us yet on the racetrack, and he said, what we'll do today, we're riding really quiet. And I remember the horse just sort of come out of barriers quite slow. And I was out the back, and it was quite a good field on this Wednesday. And he flew home, and the sectionals that you mentioned, he ran was unbelievable. And that's the way his pattern in racing, we learned. And he just went from strength to strength from then on. But
in that cup, though, you rode him closer, didn't you?
Yeah, I drew a good barrier.
Rode him sweetly and held your spot. Yeah,
I drew a really good barrier. I was number one rider for Lee then at the time, and I had the choice between him and Terrific about 3 weeks before the race. I had to sort of make a decision. And Terrific was going so-so at the time, but I knew he could run 2 mile. And Superimpose, well, he was a superior horse, but whether he could run 2 mile, and he was going good. So I chose Super, of course, and I was really happy. When the barriers come out, I thought, oh, great, I've drawn in, and I'll be able to just rest him as long as I could. And that's what happened during the run. And I remember getting to about the 700, 800 metre mark, and I was just cantering, and everything sort of opened up for me.
Was it Coods who hit the front on the turn?
Yeah. Coods was it. Michael Clark and Coods hit the front of the
Colin
turn.
Colin Hayes.
And I ended up getting up right behind Coods, and about the 300 metre mark, I thought, I've just come out here. I'm going to win my cup, but just don't go too soon. I just sort of wait, and I thought, I'm home for sure. And when I pressed the button, he went and got past Coods, and then boom, then he hit the brick wall. I was thinking, I could see one come down the outside, didn't really hit me straight away, it was Terrific, but when it did, I thought, oh well, he's done a great job, this horse that runs second, we've had a, no excuse, we had a great run, and you know what could have been? I could have rode Terrific, but my horse Superimpose, I was very proud of him on the day, and he ran a great race.
It's a bit of pill to swallow coming back in the second, the runner-up stall, and you did that three times in the Melbourne Cup on that particular year. Shane Dye beat you on Terrific, and it happened again with Shagamar in 1984. You actually beat Black Knight in track record time on the Geelong Cup, and Black Knight knocked you out in the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah,
10 days later, or whatever.
Yeah.
That was 84, and then on a journey. Behind the wonderful mare Mackay B. Devi, who flew home. So 3 seconds in the Melbourne Cup. You've run out of time. Congressman in that Caulfield Cup, beaten an eyelash in the early 80s by Impazira. Cox Plate second, on El Segundo behind Fields of Omar. Bad luck, mate.
That was your
2006.
Well done, mate.
So those three, the ones that every jockey want to win, Melbourne Cup, Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate, 3 seconds in the Melbourne Cup, eyelashes in the Caulfield Cup, eyelash in the Cox Plate.
Yeah, well, I would have loved to have won any one of them, I tell you. But it didn't happen, and I've got no regrets, Brian. You know, I've had a wonderful career, and looking forward to my next stage now, I suppose, coaching the apprentices.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after this break. Darren Gauchy talking with us on his last day that he goes to the races today with three rides at Caulfield. And fittingly, the last race today at 5:25 is the Darren Gauchy Farewell Handicap. And you know what? Darren Gauchy is riding number three for his old boss, Johnny Hawks, and the team on Longeron. Special guest here. It's great to have him here for the final day as a jockey, and that is one of the greats in racing, in Darren Gauchy. As we went for that break, Gauch, we spoke about you and you mentioned the new role. And tell us what the new role is.
My new role is to work with the apprentice coaching team to help the apprentices. And over the past 4 or 5 years, I've been watching them, and they've actually done a fantastic job, as it's proof our apprentices of so much
fantastic talent we have now.
Fantastic talent, so far more advanced than what they used to be, and I'm looking forward to this sort of role because it's something I've always wanted to do. And when the opportunity came along, there was a vacant spot there. That's why I applied, and I thought maybe I could have voted for maybe a couple more years, but it's when it came along, I didn't want to miss it.
You've got four children. You're married to Karen, of course, and what was their feeling? You know, you always discuss, I'm sure, a career move like this with family, that you know, that's all they've known you as a jockey.
As a jockey, I think they're a little bit relieved. They're happy that I'm still going to be involved in racing and I'm going to take up this new role. So the last day they'll be with me today, or, you know, at the races, of course. And they've been, my wife and my kids have all been great supporters over the years, and they put up with me, so... Like I said, I think they're a little bit relieved.
Mm. And your wife, particularly back in the 80s, that terrible fall from Strike the Gong, I reckon it was, Yarra Glen Cup Day.
Yeah.
That was a shocker. And you're out for a long time. In recent years, the horse collapsed at Mornington underneath you. And again, you're out with, what, 8 to 10 months, was it?
Yeah, I was out in total 10 months for that fall at Mornington.
Yeah, so they've lived through all those things. And... no one wants to see a husband or a dad go to work and not come home, and, you know, next visit is the hospital and you're in a serious way. So they'd be relieved that, you know, because it's such a dangerous sport.
It is a dangerous sport. And look, I've had my fair share of falls over the time, which we all do. It's part and parcel of being a jockey. And I'm fortunate enough and only got one more day to go. And I'm still pretty fit.
So you take up this role as a mentor to the apprentices. That is the absolute perfect fit for you. And I think so many within the industry and the sport have said, well, no better bloke to do it. There's no better person to mentor, because you arguably are the greatest apprentice jockey we've seen in our time, and riding onto a senior level. 2,500 winners, 35 group ones everywhere around Australia at the highest level. So did you have to... To get this job, okay, your racing excellence is acknowledged, but did you have to do a course of some sort?
I did. About a year ago, I went into the VRC and I spoke to Bernard Salisbury, and about when I do retire. I wasn't sure when I was going to retire. But
this is Racing Victoria. Yeah.
And Bernard suggested, well, whilst you're still riding, you probably could still do a Cert 4, which you'll have to do if you want to take up a role here. In Racing Victoria,
and certificate
four.
Righto.
So he encouraged me to do that, and I did start doing it. Brian, I hadn't been to school for like 36 years, and I remember going to class the first day. It was 9 till 5, of course, at Swinburne University, and at the end of the day, I had no idea. And I think I had about 10 classes to do over a period of 6 months, and cut a long story short, I think I had about 2 nervous breakdowns and ended up smashing one computer. But I passed
good boy,
the help of my daughter Brianna and family, but yeah. got there.
You got your certificate.
I got my certificate.
Now, you're still licensed to the end of the season, the end of July?
Yes, I am.
As a jockey?
I'm still licensed. Yeah.
So would you be able to use that license? Would you still ride track work with the apprentices, the boys and girls coming through? Or you can, obviously.
Well, if required, I will, yeah. Because I think it'd be fantastic to have the apprentice and actually ride beside him or her and be able to give my advice. And, you know, you can always stand there and watch them ride a horse or watch them ride track work. But I think it's one thing, it'd be a great benefit for the apprentice if you're up beside them, actually see them close up. And being able to communicate with that person at the same time, I think, will help. And I know Matty Pumper the other day, I don't think he's been on the horse for about 4 years, and he had to ride work, end up riding one work with one of the apprentices, and it did work very well.
Yeah. This week, the final week, gee, you spread yourself around. You went to Terang and you rode a winner at Terang.
Yeah, I went to Terang, had five rides, and fortunately enough, I did ride a winner. So it's been a pretty busy week. I've rode just about everywhere this week, and yesterday I was at Maui, and nearly got one up and ran second, but now I'm looking forward to today.
When you're driving home from Maui yesterday after all these years, did it dawn on you this is the last time you'd make the trip to the country as a A-class licensed jockey?
Well, it did. It actually dawned on me. I actually picked up another ride in the last race yesterday, and I was in the barriers, and one of the boys said, jockeys just come in the barriers, said, Gerge, he goes, you realise this is your last ride in the country. And it just bang, it hit me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Look, it's my last ride, and I've gone out on a good note, so hopefully today it's the same.
The accolades have been coming your way all week from everyone, and even outside racing, which is fantastic. You cross the boundary there to sport and this wonderful human interest story. And I think it's because of your demeanour and your manner. You've always been acknowledged as a great racing ambassador, but a good fella, a terrific bloke. And you talk to the trainers, the jockeys, and nothing's changed over 3.5 decades. You must be very proud of that.
I am very proud of that. You know, I like I said, it's easy to lose your way a little bit and ignore this and that and the other. But I've always been brought up to respect everybody and treat people the way they treat yourself. And I've been fortunate over the years I've been riding to meet some fantastic people, make really good friends, and racing's been very good to me, and like I said, I have no regrets, and it is a bit sad for me. It's my last day today, and I am going to miss riding, because once I'm on a horse, I'm at home. I love it, but on the other hand, I'm very fortunate that I've been given the opportunity to take this next role, because I do love teaching the apprentices. I've mentored quite a few apprentices over the years already, and I really get a buzz out of seeing them succeed, and hopefully I can keep that going and do well.
Three rides today. You ride in the second race a horse called Goodwill at Caulfield. You go to race number 6 and you ride Miss Gidget for the Aldersons. You've had a lot of luck with the Colin and Cindy Alderson down through the years with the Group 1 wins. And
yeah, I have.
It's been a terrific stable for you. And then you come home the last, race number 9 on Longeron for John Hawkes. And that association links back to riding Octagonal and winning the Guineas on Lonro and winning the Doncaster and beating Sunline right on the line on over. That's been a wonderful association. What, 12 years were you with the Hawks team?
Yeah, I was 12 years with John and the Hawks team. And it was a wonderful part of my career. And we had some really nice winners. And I rode quite a lot of winners for John. And he taught me a lot, John. And I'm very grateful that we had that relationship. We're still good mates. And I'm very proud today to be riding in the last race for John.
Yeah. And Gouch, what was the best horse? Not so much the best horse. You mentioned Superimpose, and we spoke about Shaftesbury Avenue is a great horse. You rode in the Japan Cup, but What was the one that gave you the greatest buzz, do you think?
Well, there's a lot of them. You know, all my Group 1 winners, they all give you a real buzz. But horses like, I remember a horse I ran second the first time in Melbourne Cup was Chagamar.
Yeah.
84. I used to ride him every morning, and he was a great little horse, just an out-and-out trier. And I remember that year he when he ran second in the Melbourne Cup, he nearly died 6 months before.
Gee.
And it was just a second thought to run him in the Geelong Cup, and he won the Geelong Cup, and Jeff goes, well, we might as well go to the Melbourne Cup, and he ran second. But a horse like him, I won like two or three Dalgettys on him. And things like that. Those are the horses that early in my career, such as him, Pleach, and they put me on the map.
Yeah.
And Targa Cliffs. And they're the horses that have a special part. I've been a special part of my life, and so are the others. And look, my probably biggest Group 1 that I won was actually in Sydney at the Doncaster on a horse called Over, who beat the Mighty Mare Sunline, and was just, he was one of those horses, the same, he wasn't the best horse I rode, but when you rode him, they would just give you 110%, and particularly that day, it was such a great race, it was a big build-up, and that was probably my biggest thrill, and also Octagonal Sun, Long Row, in the Guineas. I don't think I've ever been on many horses in Group 1 races that I'm back near last on the turn, and I knew I was going to win.
You know,
in a Guineas field like that, of that class, and I remember that day, the acceleration was just unbelievable.
You were 17 when you won your first Group 1 on Targa Cliffs for Bart Cummings, and the owner was Vic Peters, and Targa Cliffs won the Oaks, and you were 17. That was the week that you rode the three on Derby Day. And Bart Cummings, apparently the owner, Vic Peters, said to Bart, what are the instructions for the boy, as he refers to you? And Bart said, this kid's a champion. You don't have to give him instructions. And you were 17. Extraordinary. And that was from the master, Bart Cummings.
It was. I remember the day when I walked out, I was nervous.
It was a wet day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a wet day. It was raining. And by the time I finished talking to Bart in the room, in the mountain yard, he had me calm as a cucumber.
Yeah.
It was basically, I knew what I was going to do anyway. I was just going to be, always get back on her. And I thought when Mick Dittman comes out to 600, I'll be on his back. And, you know, being such a great rider, Mick, he always put the horses in the winning spot. A champion rider, he always put his horses in the winning spot at the right time. And all I had to do was follow him. And thank God, she was too good on the day.
Yeah. Are you nervous about today?
I'm a little bit nervous, yeah. A little bit pumped up, Liam. Sort of got mixed emotions, you know, it's sort of my last day, and I know I'm going to miss it, but like I said before, I've had my day in the sun, and I've had a wonderful career, and I'm very grateful, and I'm actually overwhelmed by the support that I've had from my friends and my family and everybody in racing, and the publicity I've had on my retirement has been fantastic.
It started at Caulfield, and it's come the full circle. The Melbourne Racing Club will celebrate you today, and that's fantastic. And I'm coming out. I'm not calling today, but I'll be out there about the last hour and a half. I'll give you a cheer, mate, because we've come a long way.
Yeah, we have come a long way in our careers.
Good luck today. You've been an ornament, as they say, to the game of horse racing. You're sole racing like no other. It's been an absolute pleasure to be involved with you from the media side, but I'm sure I speak on behalf of everyone within the media, but all those racing fans that you've given so much enjoyment to and maybe lined their pockets with gold along the way. Ride safe, and good luck in the next stage of your life too.
Thanks very much, Brian. It's been a pleasure, and thank you and to all the team here. It has always been supportive of mine, and always said good things about me, and you all do a wonderful job. Thank you.
Darren Gauchy, a champion.